was Bill making all the noise, by the way. Oh, and that big crash you heard earlier, that was Bill, too. Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name's Aaron Ryan.
And my name's not Aaron Ryan. I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. You can visit them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or call them on the phone at 530-226-9226. Give them a call. Anything tractors or turf equipment, they've got it more than likely in stock and ready to go. Is the season for grass, so things are starting to dry out. You're going to have to go out there and start turning the ground and mowing and all that fun stuff. So go by and see them. You can also get them on the web at papemachinery.com. They got a good website there, very interactive. Pape Machinery.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, generators, tractors. And for heaven's sakes, mow your grass early this year. We can't afford to have a bunch of fires.
That's
again.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
And also, they're now a steel dealer. So if you need a string trimmer or a chainsaw or hedge trimmer, they've got it all in stock. Just go in there and pick something out.
Mosey around. They're open because they're essential.
Yes.
We should bring that up.
That's right. They are essential.
They're essential.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, for all you essential businesses out there, apparently OSHA is showing up at people's businesses, and they walk in and say they're from OSHA, and then they stick their hand out, and if you shake their hand, then you get busted.
Yeah, that's a violation of the health safety code.
How great is that?
Yeah, so they're just there to help.
If OSHA shows up, don't touch any of them, ever.
Yeah, ever.
It's not good. It's going to cost you. Oh, my gosh. Well, We the People Radio is now on television, which I know sounds confusing, but it's kind of fun. I've had some people call and say that they, I don't know, we haven't had a lot of antics lately. You know, Bill hasn't really been headbutting the microphone. We've been pretty tame. But you can catch all that on KRDT Channel 23.7 Tuesday nights on the American Uncensored Network here in Redding, California.
There you go.
Go figure that out. So our guest today is Skip Palmer. He is a retired U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service guy who lives on the National Bison Range in Montana, and he is they had five generations of their family. He is the third generation to be living on the bison range. And, hey, so Skip, when you're not, you know, when you're retired and stuff, what do you do there? Are you like a cattle guy or, you know, you just hang out?
No, I got a mob of horses.
Horse guy.
Oh, yeah. But by the time you water the grass, raise the hay, cut the hay, bale the hay, pick up the hay, stack the hay, wintertime comes, you got to feed the hay. It keeps me busy. And they're just plain old horses. We're mountain kind of guys. We do a lot of packing and hunting in the mountains and a lot of fish trips in the summertime. And basically, they're just plain horses, nothing fancy.
Well, that's
but
fun.
But it does keep me busy.
That sounds like it.
I'm an inlay. I have 20 acres. I was raised on a dairy, 300-acre dairy. My dad was very successful at the dairy business. When he retired out, we tried to decide what we was going to do with our land. And my dad had always managed his land quite well. And the subdividers wanted it real bad to chop it up, and Dad wasn't into that. So he asked the Montana State Fish and Game if they would buy it for wildlife habitat because our property borders them and always has. And through some wheeling and dealing, we ended up selling the family farm to the Montana State Fish and Game to add to the wildlife refuge. And the Montana State Fish and Game could not pay subdivision price, of course, subdivide price. So my dad, over the years, had gathered land. He actually paid $1,100 for 40 acres just before the war, World War II, and he paid for it with skunk pelts. They trapped skunks all winter long.
Oh, boy.
And for the war effort. And that's how he paid for it. So I asked him, I said, what is capital gains going to do to you on this situation if you sell to the subdividers? And so basically, the county the state and the federal government wrote off Dad's taxes so that they he sold it for a agricultural price and got to write the taxes off. So he got to put the same amount of money in his pocket as if he would have sold to the subdividers. And now our family farm is part of the wildlife refuge. And I happen to be a 20-acre inlay in that. So I manage my property for wildlife.
So if the geniuses up in your area do give the bison range handed over to the tribe, then that property that your dad sold that borders your property is no longer necessarily managed for wildlife. They can pretty much do anything they want with it?
Well, that is what that is one of the questions that has been asked by our county commissioners to the state of Montana and to Senator Daines, and they will not give us an answer. It goes through the way it appears is what they want it to go through. This land would be managed as by the tribe, and they don't have to treat it as a wildlife refuge. They could have put a subdivision on it if they want. That was an understanding between my dad and the Montana State Fish and Game when he sold the property, that he was selling it to them for the purpose of wildlife. But that doesn't mean the next owner has to abide by that.
That's right.
So it's all up for grabs. And that was a legitimate question that many people ask about our state land, and they got no response. It was one of those, we'll let you know when we pass a bill, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like Obamacare. You got to pass a bill to see what's in it.
Mm. So is subdivided land in high demand in your area?
Yeah, it is. It's not because we're rolling in jobs around here. They're taking the family farm, which was about 250 to 300 acres. They are not big enough anymore to support the grandpa and grandma and dad and the next generation. So a lot of those farms are being broke up into smaller tracts with one house on it. So that's the way it's going, is we're getting a lot of single-family homes around us on what used to be family farms. We'll now have three houses to four houses on it.
Right. Hmm. So the tribe has not given any indication of their plans for that refuge, if it's transferred. They're keeping that all pretty close to the vest, huh?
Yes. At this point, we don't even know if it's in the negotiations, because nobody will tell us. The Montana State Fish and Game, when they are asked point blank, well, we don't know. What do you mean you don't know? It's your agency. It's your land, and you don't know if it's on the chopping block?
Yeah, that's totally believable.
You look at them with this blank stare, like, how can you possibly not ask those questions? As being the director of the Montana State Fish and Game, why have you not asked that question? Why haven't you forced an answer from somebody? But they don't. They're sitting back and see where the chips fall.
Hmm. So are there other bison ranges in Montana, or is this it?
No, this is the National Bison Range, federal. There's lots of private buffalo herds. There's the big issue with the Yellowstone herd roaming out of the park and going north and getting on private property. And so they've been capturing them and transferring them to native tribes that want to start their own bison herd. And so that's been working out quite well. But now we have a group, the Nature Conservancy, they want to take 750,000 acres in private property, plus the 1.6 million acres of the wildlife refuge over there on the Fort Peck Reservoir and turn it into a gigantic open range bison thing for a wild bison. And that is a huge issue here in Montana at this point in time, you know, to just bring all the bison from Yellowstone and just turn them loose and let them go where they want. I guess you know that has caused a bit of a stink.
Well, yeah.
I would imagine so. Let's take a really quick break here, and we'll be right back with our guest, Skip Palmer. You are listening to We the People Radio. You can listen to us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We've got commercial-free archives for you on all of our programs going back 10 years. And you can also catch us on the KRDT channel, 23.7 channel, Tuesday nights in Reading on the American Uncensored Network. There you go.
Progress came and took its toll. Look for the bare necessities, simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities, Mother Nature's recipe. Bring the bare necessities of life.
Couldn't talk about Yellowstone without a little Satchmo.
Yeah, a little Satchmo.
It just seemed wrong to skip it. So with Yellowstone and all these other places that there are bison, if they screw up the National Bison Range and lose that genetic control, do they just go away?
Yeah. They would lose it. They would lose the genetic control of that herd.
So there's kind of a lot at stake here.
And that genetic herd is very important. It's been in, it's been part of the, like they call the meadow population study, and they've studied, they've taken blood samples of all the herds in the United States under federal control, and to make sure that they don't have cow genes in them, you know, some they didn't get mixed up somewhere. And it's very important to make sure that we have pure bison, and that's just part of this, part of it. And but we will lose that control. They say they will, but there's no guarantee. And that
and there's no recourse like there would be with a federal agency. I mean, people could file complaints and all that stuff if they felt it wasn't being managed properly. But if once the tribe has it, nobody has a say.
Correct. The federal government has given up all control. And if you try to ask them, or you can't even take them to court, if you see something blatantly wrong, you're not going to get them to court. They don't have to, they don't have to go to court. You cannot do that. That's one of the things that is wrong with this whole situation. Back to the water part. They redesigned the highway going across the reservation, and the tribes insisted that a complete NEPA be done before they turned the first shovel of dirt. That took 10 years to do a NEPA to make sure how much wetland they were going to destroy, where the road was going to go. The tribe had the input on what was going to happen. Lots of different stuff before they ever turned the first shovel. Here we are with a water project where they're planning on giving the tribes control of all the water from the top of the mountain, clear across the valley floor, and out the other side, the water that ends up going down to you folks and the people down in the Columbia. They don't require, they're not requiring to do a NEPA. We have no idea what the tribes plan to do in their reconstruction of the irrigation project, which in the Danes bill gives them millions of dollars to do. They don't have to tell the farmer what he's going to do, or the rancher, or the landowner. If they take a, if there's a small canal that goes through your place and they want to carry more water, they could eat a swath across your place and do whatever they want, and you don't know about it until the machinery show up. And
wow.
So we need a NEPA, an environmental assessment, on what the tribe is going to do to our water project if Dane's bill goes through.
And how many people are affected by that project?
Here on the all the people on the reservation, over about 45,000. Yeah, there's a lot of people involved, and that's just on the reservation. This Dane's bill goes off the reservation. It takes water right from the Hungry Horse, miles off of the project itself. Some of our folks up in Kalispell, I don't think they understand how important this is to them. They are upstream from us. The tribes have control of the water. Now they can use their EPA standing with the Clean Water Act, and now counties north of the reservation will be applying for building permits from the tribal council on the Flathead Indian Reservation. It's just a big can of worms that nobody's looking at the final outcome, what the repercussions of this could possibly be. And the Danes and Tester folks are not turning that information out, and when we ask the question, we do not get the answers.
I wonder if they've done the homework on it. I wonder if they even know.
Well, obviously they haven't, because I'm looking at the bill on congress.gov. It's Senate Bill 3019, the Montana Water Rights Protection Act. So, what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
It is huge here, and I think a lot of the folks that are in charge do know, but they're not letting their constituents know, no more than Danes and Tester are letting us know. We have to figure it out on our own. That's the reason I and a small group finally had enough, and we had to hire ourselves a very nice attorney. And with all the information that we'd gathered over the years and all of the FOIA requests that were sent out, we learned a whole lot in a big hurry. And there's a lot of people out there in some very important positions that should be ashamed of themselves by letting this thing happen. They could have spoke up when they didn't. Our county commissioner should have spoke up a little earlier. They're a wonderful bunch. They're between a rock and a hard spot, considering in the county we have tribal folks and non-tribal folks, so that this county commissioners have to walk this fine line. They can't spend a lot of money fighting a issue that maybe half of the constituents are for.
Right.
The good news in looking at the detail here that's very thin on congress.gov, the bill was introduced on December 11th, 2019. It has one co-sponsor. It was introduced by Senator Steve Daines, and its sole co-sponsor is Senator John Tester. Mm. So the two of them are out, really riding the range alone on this deal, and it hasn't had any sort of action. It's been referred to the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, so, if you get lucky, and there's no related bill in the House so far, you might run out of year, and it may die a slow death.
Well, if we can shine the spotlight on it, we don't have the problem up here up north, but I've spent some time down south. Sometimes you'd walk into a place that wasn't very well kept, and you turn on the kitchen light, and you could see the floor make a run for it. And basically, that's what we're doing, is when we got our attorney, we told him that, and we ended up getting an attorney out of New York City.
And he's actually on the other line. We're going to...
very good. I'm glad to hear he's hanging on.
Yeah, we're gonna roll Larry Kogan in here in a minute. And for those of you...
Okay, we had the issue with all of our local attorneys in the state of Montana have already been represented, or they have an inside glitch, or they're connected to, or they're related to somebody in the state of Montana. We told our attorney that we wanted him to go out and follow the leads, and we don't care who is the light shines on. We aren't going to pick somebody out that, well, don't go over there because he's my friend. If you're guilty, we want you in line. And that's where we're going with this thing. And we hope that we shine enough light on this thing that the Bison Range part of it dies. But we've still got the water issue that is just as bad as the Bison Range issue. And I want your folks down your part of the country to know that this will eventually run downhill to you, because what happens here on this water compact and the Bison Range giveaway is precedent setting, because there's too many tribes out there waiting to see exactly how this is going to go down, because it opens the door opportunity for them to do basically the same thing. And when it comes to the water, it's all a matter of control. Whoever controls the water controls everything.
Yeah.
And I feel sort of sorry for the tribes sometimes, because I think the federal government is using them. They're using them to get all of the water assigned over to them, basically. And it's going to be a lot easier 20, 30, 40 years from now to go ahead and say, well, guess what? Your trust responsibility, we done changed this. We put an act in there that we need that water somewhere else, and it's ours because you helped us take it away from those private landowners and put it in our coffer. And I just feel that the tribes are being used on it in some manner.
Yeah, and what we see in our area is a lot of co-opting with the environmental groups, and I'm sure that they're not absent in your neck of the woods either. Let's take our break like just a teensy bit early, and then when we come back, we can conference Larry in, just so that we can have time for that, because Larry's always very entertaining. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us. There's no better introduction for Larry Cogan than that song.
How are you, Larry?
So, Mr. Cogan, talk to us about your side of the situation up there in Montana.
Well, you know how they like New Yorkers in Montana, huh?
Yeah, they love them. They love New Yorkers everywhere, and especially now that President Trump's in. People are really loving New Yorkers. You're kind of faint.
With all that.
You're very faint, which is un-New Yorker-ish for you. You need to be louder, as you've never heard that before.
Well, you know, I'm traveled out of New York, and therefore I have like a broader perspective. And, you know, and if once you get a New Yorker on horseback for 8 hours and he didn't fall off, okay, then I could start crowing a little bit. But the Montanans speak the poor tongue without a doubt.
Skip just did a tell-all there. Good one, Skip.
I was on horseback herding 200 head of cattle in Klamath, Oregon in 2016 May, and they tried to get that horse to gallop and knock me down, but it didn't happen. although I have to admit, I had the most painful night of sleep I ever had in my life.
But, felt a little bow-legged, did you?
I don't know what it was. My body had gone in directions that it hadn't gone in since I was a kid, you know. But I didn't end up on the ground. That's all that mattered. And I was able to stand tall the next day after my bowled leg straightened out.
Well, the only the only good part of that, Larry, is your significant other can put some grease on the saddle source.
You're right. I'm glad that they tied the saddle on tight, too.
This is going down a dark trail.
On the side of the mountain that I was walking on, riding on. But, the story of Montana's water compact just continues. It doesn't go away because the Confederated Sailors of Kootenai tribes think of themselves as celebrity. They're like the Hollywood tribe, you know. They're the first federally recognized tribe out of 567, so they believe they're entitled to go back in history and recreate their aboriginal territory. And unfortunately, the federal courts out west in the Ninth Circuit believe in this nonsense, and they've been empowering and encouraging these types of tribes, including in the Klamath region, to assert themselves and to claim that the federal government owes them a big one under this federal trust obligation. And because of that, under the Obama administration, which was a champion of this federal trust obligation, that we found actually goes back to the 19th century, early 1830s. There were three Supreme Court cases in the 1830s. A trilogy of cases that actually articulated the federal trust obligation from international law at the time. And they cited a French international law expert for the proposition that strong countries need to protect weak, non-functioning peoples. And where do you think the UN trusteeship notion came from? That's the same notion. So the tribes are dependent sovereigns, dependent on the United States government, which, if they didn't have that kind of stewardship by the U.S. government, these tribes would be pretty much SOL. And the money's coming from Congress. And the money's then get circulated among the congressional delegation of Montana. So, you know, one hand washes the other, wink, wink, nod, nod, and everybody's in on the same game. The only problem is that they don't tell the people of Montana what's going on, especially on and near the reservation. They have to find out for themselves, and then when they think they've got allies, advocates, the advocates do not really tell them the truth. They tell them we're going to help you, and then it ends up their money is spent, and they're not any better off than they were before. You know, they stage fake press releases and press announcements just to make people believe that they're doing something for their constituents, and then nothing happens.
Wow.
And it's unfortunate because they take advantage of these people. I mean, they're not as well educated as the, pardon me, the legal community in Montana. It's a small legal community. And, They take advantage. Now the question is, why would they do that? We haven't really figured out the answer to that yet, though it has to do something with the natural resources. It's either the water or it's the minerals, or both.
We haven't even talked about minerals.
They must get a piece of the action. I mean, one thing that we found during the writing of the FOIA request was that the former Deputy Attorney General under Mr. Fox he retired from the Attorney General's office, and he ended up having a very big interest in a mineral mine near Billings.
Huh.
Now, that is pure coincidence, isn't it?
I'm sure.
Did he have any political influence, maybe? Possibly. Did he have any friends there willing to do a quid pro quo? possibly. Can't prove anything. I'm not even alleging it. But it does smell, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially, the thing that always bugs me the most about all of this is that the taxpayers are fighting all of these people. Could be their county folks, could be the state representatives, federal, the agencies. All of those people are paid with their tax dollars. So they are financing a giant multi-pronged force that's coming at them full blast, and they've got to finance their own defense as well.
Well, plus they're, one thing I learned about farmers and ranchers out west is that everybody likes to stand strong on their own. They don't like to have to depend on other people.
That's true. It's not a group sport.
Right. So, when they're out on their own and then they get split by these, exploitationists, opportunists, they get split into subgroups and they don't have any strength in the few numbers that they are. And then they, argue with each other and they never get anything accomplished.
Is that happening in Montana too?
Oh, yeah. You know it's happening in Klamath when we were there all trying to fight the agreements that the Obama administration, first the Bush administration introduced, then the Obama administration tried to seal the deal. And they didn't want to admit that it was just another form of an interstate compact which would require congressional ratification under the Constitution's clause for interstate compacts. But they would never allude to it, and they would never admit it once they were confronted with that issue. And then they get the tribes all excited. Now, it's wrong to blame the tribal members really for anything other than trying to assert their rights to being treated as equal Americans.
Well, a lot of times, though, it's just the leadership, because I know that many of our tribes up north, the members of the tribe know that, like in our particular fight, taking out the Klamath dams will actually hurt them downriver. The tribal members know that, but the folks running it that are in their tribal council, I don't know what their gain is on that, but they're bound and determined to be a party to getting rid of that. And the other thing we learned from Elaine Willman years ago when we first, met all of you guys and started learning about Montana, she had told us that didn't really matter which reservation. If you cross the tribal council, you pay a price.
Yes. And actually, Elaine is coming out with a new book, by the way.
Huh?
In fact, I think she would be very happy to come on your show to promote it once it's available during early summer.
Okay.
It's entitled American Tribal Tyranny. That's what it's entitled. And it's, from what I understand, it's going to be a really rich read. And I think it's something your audience would want to hear about.
Nice. And in this particular, in the Montana situation that Skip has been telling us about, you don't just have federal folks and state folks. You have some of the local not necessarily elected representation, but maybe council for that has also kind of shot him in the back?
Well, it's the same thing as in Klamath, okay? We have the federal, authorities in the various regulatory agencies that have jurisdiction over the various aspects of the project or program they're trying to push. Then you got the state officials that are in bed with them. Then you got the local yokels that want the federal money. They want the federal welfare and they don't want to farm anymore. They're getting older in age and, their kids don't want it. So they want to take the money. And they work against the farmers that do want to continue to farm and pass this legacy onto their families. But they don't do it honestly. They do it behind your back. And they claim, how could you trust an outsider when we're all neighbors?
Right, even though they're cutting a side deal in a back room.
It's like they pretend that it's Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and then they cut you in half when they're outside your presence. And they work against you. It happened in Montana when we tried to address the dam transfer issue, when we tried to address the water compact. And now with respect to the bison range, it's the same thing. You have the entire Montana congressional delegation actually sent in letter requests to the Fish and Wildlife Service seeking technical assistance in the drafting of legislation to help the tribes obtain the transfer of the bison range. It's on paper. The FOIAs, it's in the FOIA responses. And it's rather amazing that all three of them were involved. Danes, Mr. Tester, of course, and then Mr. Zinke. Mr. Zinke is a comedian's dream, because he does have two sides of his mouth that from which he speaks. Depends upon who's in the room. And the fact that he came out in 2017 after the expressed official policy of the Fish and Wildlife Service was, we are going to transfer the bison range rather than try to negotiate another advanced funding agreement with them. And it's okay if we do, because this is a unique situation and it's reparations of sorts. He said, no, that's not our policy. We're not going to give away. I said we're not going to transfer or sell any federal land, and I meant what I said. The problem is, he doesn't have any power over that. It's not his call. It's the Congress's call.
It's good to stand tall on someone else's decision. We have to take a really quick break. I will have to exert my fun killer powers here. We'll be right back to talk about the National Bison Range.
Do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone.
That whisper singing, that was Bill. Just by the way.
Hey, I have a question. We've talked a lot about the Fish and Wildlife Service and their management of the bison range. My question is, why would they support a move to lose that control or give that control away? What's their agenda?
Well, every federal agency, Bill, has a legal and fiduciary obligation under this notion of tribal fiduciary trust obligation to defer to the preferences of the tribe and the needs of the tribe whenever possible. That includes even sacrificing the mission statement of the federal agency to some extent in order to appease the tribes. In this particular case, the tribe has claimed that this was part of its historical territory. It's a reservation, actually, within a reservation. Okay, in 1855, with the Hellgate Treaty, the federal government reserved land for the tribes in exchange for the tribes giving up all of its old territory. And in 1908, former President Theodore Roosevelt set aside land within the Flathead Indian Reservation as a natural preserve for bison. Bison were almost extinct at that time in history. The tribe had their own bison herd, and they were losing the herd. They weren't stewarding it properly. So in order to preserve the species, this refuge was established. Then was enlarged. First, it was established to be no more than 12,800 acres. They then increased it in size to up to 20,000 acres. And that became the Bison Range in 1908, and then it was expanded in 1921, I believe, by former President Harding to include migratory birds as a refuge within the refuge. So you have a reservation, and whenever you have that reservation, you're really talking about either Article, you know, the property clause of the United States Constitution. And essentially the federal government holds federal land in trust for all Americans throughout the nation, in perpetuity, so that people can enjoy and use these federal lands for purposes of recreation and to learn about nature. The tribe wants this land back. They want to reestablish their old historical territory before the state of Montana was formed, before the United States was formed. Pre-European discovery era is Aboriginal. Okay, and they use the term Aboriginal, and somehow the courts in the Ninth Circuit have used that term and given it credibility. If taken to its logical extreme, we wouldn't have a United States of America anymore.
Right.
Because every tribe would reassert its Aboriginal territory rights. No more 50 states. Or they wouldn't look nearly the same as they do now. Now, tribes don't have any obligation under the tribal sovereignty doctrine to abide by the United States Constitution, because, as the reasoning goes, they were here before the Constitution was formed. Now, what does that mean for all of us, for the entire country, as a nation, as a civitas? What does that mean?
It means we're going to fund public land and lose access.
Right. They have no obligation. They say in the legislation, oh, we're going to provide public access to the Bison Range.
They don't have to.
They don't have to. You're right. They don't have to meet federal statutory requirements. They don't have to meet U.S. constitutional requirements.
They don't have to maintain the herd.
They don't have to do anything, because the primary purpose of restoring, use the word restoration, which is a interesting word, because it's taking something and bringing it back in time to what it was before.
But that's never really what happens. You hear the word restoration, your wallet should run and hide, because what that really means is we're going to restore it to a place we think it should have been, which means we'll never get there, and you're going to get to pay for it forever.
Right, but it's also becoming part of the reservation again, okay, which means that if anything happens on that piece of land, you're subject to tribal, you may be subject to tribal court.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about that part. Another bonus.
So there's legal implications here. You know, if you do something they don't like, they can haul you right into court. They can put you in an Indian jail.
Yeah, your constitutional rights are basically suspended.
Well, that's the problem with the tribal members themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Since Indians are not covered by the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, Congress came up with a fix. It's called the Indian Civil Rights Act of 68. The problem with that is it gives the tribal council discretion and does not require them to recognize all Bill of Rights of their tribal members. They have an abridged Bill of Rights as Americans.
So these people that own property on the reservation, are they subject to the Indian law if they own private property within that reservation?
They can have roads blocked on them, even though they own the property. The Indians will own the roads.
Hmm.
Okay? It's happened already. There are just lawsuits on this, where somebody had a home. It was actually a member of the Crow. Was it the Crow tribe or the Blackfoot tribe that owned a home that they, I think, converted into a vacation setting, and they were blocked from ingress and egress because the tribe took control over the roads. Everything becomes much more difficult, and since this tribe loves to assert itself and to intimidate people when things don't go their way, It makes for a very difficult environment, I am told by locals.
Right.
See, and you have the same thing. There are people who have private property inside land that's managed by BLM or another federal agency, which means you have an easement to get to your property. But I can think of an instance up in Oregon where they wanted this lady off the property. She wouldn't sell. So they just keep changing the lock on the gate. So she'll come back from getting groceries or something in Medford, and she's out of town a ways, gets to the gate, finds there's a new lock. They're required to give her a key, but she has to be able to get back to Medford to the BLM office before 5 o'clock to get the key in order to get back to her house.
Wow.
So, I mean.
But at least in a case like that, your constitutional rights aren't suspended because.
Your ownership is. The ownership of your private property is at the whim of an agency. So, I mean, this by extension is by the whim of the tribe.
But on Indian ground, on a reservation, pretty much all your rights are suspended, aren't they? I mean, because they're a sovereign nation, so they don't.
It's true. I mean, but let's say if there's a federal crime committed on a reservation, the feds will come in.
Sure.
Otherwise, there's likely some type of agreement between the tribe and the state to have joint jurisdiction, and then they may divide down what issues each police force covers.
Right.
I mean, it is a matter of state law. It's criminal law, but it also is covered by the tribe. So if you have a crime committed by one tribal member against another, and it's within the reservation, 99% it's going to end up in tribal court, not in state court or federal court. Okay? But here's a non-criminal aspect. Okay, Mission Valley Power is the power company that sells the power to those on the reservation, both tribal and non-tribal members. If you have a problem with your bill, or if you want to go get information about this Mission Valley Power, you have a grievance, guess what? You have to contact the Bureau of Indian Affairs, ultimately.
It's almost as good as the California Public Utilities Commission.
Okay, well those people are communists.
I rest my case.
Well, it's both communal living.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's I feel sorry for Montanans living on the reservation, especially since they work so hard. They put their heart and soul into what they do, and they keep on having to deal with these nefarious characters that say they're their neighbors, but they work behind the scenes against them, and it ultimately, redounds to the favor of the tribe. I mean, ultimately, though, the federal government is the one pulling all the strings here. The federal government owns the water. The federal government exercises these water rights, these Federal Reserve water rights, at will, and lets the tribe have the equitable beneficiary interest, which is, you know, they don't own the land. It's not on their balance sheet. It's on the federal government balance sheet.
Right.
Wow. Well, we have like 30 seconds left here at this point, so we don't just cut you off. I wanted to thank both you guys for coming on. Skip, you kind of jumped in the back seat there, and Larry's been driving, but...
I've been listening.
Good call. Thanks, both you guys. We really appreciate it. And we will put any updates that you send us, we'll put on the page for April 19th, 2020. And you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune. And we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.